When family difficulties arose because Abraham had a second wife, the second one giving birth to Ishmael, Abraham sent Hagar and Ishmael away when Isaac came on the scene. How do we know from the Bible that that was the right thing to do? Welcome to Probe. We're continuing our conversations about beginnings and belongings, conversations about Genesis. Paul Dibdahl, Larry Vavirka, two of my colleagues in the School of Theology are here to carry the conversation. I'd like to toss that question back to you men again. Abraham did something that is a very complex thing. How do we evaluate the rightness or wrongness of what he did?
Yeah, the sending away of Hagar and Ishmael, it's troubling. And I think we have a sort of outline of the story, but we're missing so many details as we read exactly what's happening. Ultimately, I would say it must have been the right thing to do because Abraham inquires of God, and God basically says, yeah, go ahead and send her away. So ultimately it was the right thing to do, I guess. Is that
well,
too simplistic?
If we've learned our lesson from a previous week, the story is told. It's not told as this is what you do in this instance. It's told as a story. We also, in a previous week, noted that God works to bring good out of whatever the circumstance. And we certainly see God being very active here in both sides of this decision.
And there's a very gracious intervention in God's part, which I think is amazing. When Hagar and Ishmael get out there, and by the way, for those of you who read closely, you will notice something curious here. She tosses the babe under the bushes, but the babe is a teenager. If you take the chronology seriously, so there are some aspects here of the Old Testament chronology that are probably not quite right. But still, you get the impact of the story any way you look at it. And God speaks to Hagar in a very moving way.
Well, I just like the beginning of verse 17 there, Genesis chapter 21, verse 17. You know, you have a mother and her son wandering out in the wilderness, dying. And verse 17, God heard the boy crying. I just love that phrase itself, that God hears Ishmael as he weeps. And then the angel of the Lord called to Hagar, just as God had called to Abraham on the mountaintop. Or will call to Abraham on the mountaintop. He calls out to Hagar. What's the matter? Don't be afraid. God has heard the boy crying as he lies there. I love that picture of God with the listening ear. And even the promise that he gives there in verse 18, lift the boy up, take him by the hand, for I will make him into a great nation. That's a promise given to Ishmael, not just to Isaac.
And it reminds me of the previous case where Abram had to send Hagar away, or at least she ran away. And she catches a vision there. God sees her, and she calls it the place, God, the God of seeing.
And now we have a God who hears as well.
Yeah. Now, those are the very touching aspects of these stories, where God comes in, breaks the silence, just at a time when people need it most. Well, let's go on to one of the most famous and most challenging passages in Scripture, Genesis 22, where God comes to Abram and says, I want you to take Isaac, the son of promise, and I want you to go and offer him up to me. Now, I used to struggle with that as a kid at two levels. One, I didn't worry a lot about the possibility of my dad getting a vision and taking me to the mountaintop. I was the firstborn son. But I was troubled by the moral difficulty of why would God command Abraham to do something that was wrong. Child sacrifice, killing. What steps do you men take when you're dealing with this story with students who perhaps confront that issue? What kinds of insights do you like to share with them?
Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah. Well, it's one that I think is potentially controversial, but is helpful, has been helpful to me. And I think it's something similar. I'll marshal some support here because I think it's something similar, Alden, to what you may see as well. And that is that if we take Abraham where he was and his understanding of God and of worship and so forth. I think he lived in a world where the ultimate sacrifice that a person could make to the gods or to God was to offer one's child. That was a sign of ultimate allegiance and worship. And if that's where Abraham comes from, then God's request would make perfect sense to him. God is asking me to provide this kind of ultimate sacrifice of my son. And Abraham was willing to do that. That may lead to some other kinds of questions, of course. But I don't think, if that's the case, then Abraham is not struggling with the same kind of dilemma we are. Well, this is clearly wrong for me to do. Why would God mm-hmm. ask me? It must not be the voice of God because he's asking me to do something mm-hmm. which is contrary to his will. Abraham may not have been struggling with those same questions that we struggle with.
Well, the trouble that Abraham was struggling with is that there's a promise that God is going to make of him a great nation, and this son is it. And to eradicate the child of promise then throws into question or jeopardy the whole program of the covenant mm-hmm. promise.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Ellen White in Patriarchs and Prophets sort of, you know, got me past that in the sense that Abraham now is finally learning to trust God, who's made this promise, and that God will somehow keep this promise, and learning to be one who is obedient to God's will or wish. And Ellen White suggests that Abraham is willing and ready to take the life of his son, but then is believing that somehow God will raise him from the dead or give him back to him or in some way keep this covenant promise and that he trusts in the Lord.
And there is a clue in the text there where when he leaves the servants behind, I and the boy will go. And we will come back. It's a first-person plural, which is suggesting that there is a glimmer of hope.
Or it's a lie. I mean,
that's
the other option, I suppose.
Because Abraham is capable of telling lies.
We've seen that already, yes.
Yeah, I guess so. That's the way to keep the kid compliant. Is.
Mm-hmm. But the crucial thing for me is that there is not the same sense of moral tussle that we saw over Sodom. See, that's where Abraham confronts God, this is not right. Now, the one passage that I think is very revealing in this respect is Micah 6. This is a later prophetic statement. But it gives you the psychology, and I think this is one of the nastiest results of sin. It leads you to think that the great God of the universe actually requires you to give your firstborn. Let me just read it here, Micah 6, 6 to 8. With what shall I come before the Lord and bow myself before God on high? Shall I come before him with burnt offerings, with calves a year old? Will the Lord be pleased with thousands of rams, with 10,000s of rivers of oil? Shall I give my firstborn for my transgression, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul? If you follow that progression up, it's each one gets more serious. Bicycle, Volkswagen, Cadillac, Lamborghini. And then, shall I give the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul? The text cuts off there. Doesn't say anything about sacrifice, but I think that's the psychology that drove Abraham to the mountain, willing to do it. But you're right, Larry. He had somehow learned to trust God. There is growth and development here. But at least for me, that relieves the moral difficulty. Abraham was not doing something that he believed to be wrong. great test of faith, enormous test of faith, but he was not faced with the moral difficulties. Now, when he gets up there, that's where I think you have the most powerful insight of what's to come on Golgotha.
Mm-hmm.
Abraham, you can't sacrifice your son. I will provide the sacrifice for you. There it is behind you. Now, it's not developed in Genesis, but it's there.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that God provides the sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why Christians find this such a tempting.
Well, it's interesting to me, even God, there's the promise. Abraham says God himself will provide the lamb for the burnt offering. But it's not a lamb that's provided. It's a ram. So again, if we're real careful in the story, it's almost as if there's you're waiting for a lamb to be provided.
You're waiting
by God,
for something more.
Something more.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Now, we have only a few moments left here, but there's one other story here that is a marvelous one. Finding a wife for Isaac. The story of finding Rebecca. I could share what I find most intriguing about that story. It's how God worked providentially, but I'd be interested if each of you could maybe just give a snapshot of what you find intriguing, exciting, encouraging, helpful about that particular story. Abraham sends his servant all the way back to Mesopotamia to find a wife for Isaac.
Boy, all kinds of lessons, I suppose. The importance of finding the right person. God's interest in who we marry, who Isaac marries, and I think it's true for us too. I suppose the list could go on, but those are just a couple of very personal kinds of applications that one might draw.
Yeah. Larry, do you have any?
Well, you know, we grow up knowing the people who are around us, and the people we know are never quite as attractive as the people we don't know. So we said, forget all these ones that are around us.
Local and
go for the mysterious one. It's over there in the far country. I know that's not the reason for making that journey, but it does work that way quite often. And of course, that's a totally different culture too, where Isaac is willing to submit to the judgment of someone else. Yeah.
And Rebecca willing to go to marry someone she's never seen.
Yeah.
It's really quite amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, out of that marriage of Rebecca and Isaac, we get Jacob and Esau, and that will be the story that we pursue next time. Larry and Paul will be my conversation partners again. My thanks to Susan Michael, our program engineer, and to all of you for listening in. For Probe, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Probe, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla College and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194 or email us at probe@wwc.edu. Thanks for listening. We'll be here next week at this time with Probe.